village, which was situated on the right bank of River Indus, but this was eaten up gradually by the river, and the community supplied over to different areas. As far as the context is concerned, Bir Ghazi Khan, which is the district where this village was placed, is one of the poorest districts of Pakistan. Literacy rate in the district among women is 6%. And 6%. And controlled by big tribal and feudal lords. There are about five big tribes. Most of these tribes are Baloch. But this district is not in Balochistan, but this is in the Punjab. The village, because it was on the river bank, and our rivers are not drained, they keep on changing their course. So in the 50s, the river bank erosion started, and then the river went back, and people settled in this area called Basti Rinna. Somewhere in these 1970s, 60s, late 60s, almost half of the village converted to Ahmadiyyat, which was declared later on as non-Muslims by Pakistan's parliament. When I went first time there, I was told that there is a sectarian issue in the village. But I found out that that was a reality which was created by some vested interest. But I found a very a friendly atmosphere in the village. Ahmadis and Muslims live together next to each other. But then what happened in after the 2010 floods, the riverbank erosion accelerated, and at that time we were working for the VFL and AFL, and we tried, because in another district we had managed to make some interventions through community mobilization, which had stopped the riverbank erosion, and villages were saved. But here it was quite a difficult task. So by the time I was finishing this case study, the village was completely eaten up by the river. And the communities were spread over a large area nearby. The Ahmadis, because they are very close-knitted, they got some land bought by the Ahmadiyya community, and the village was re-established nearby. The Muslims, they have also settled in the nearby area because of some support. What had happened then in this year, and last year, there was one spur which was built by the government, was washed away as well. So that created a serious damage, and also a lot of anger among communities. They got together, and the chief minister was visiting the area, so there were big demonstrations. And immediately, chief minister announced a big amount of money to rebuild these spurs. So the spurs have been rebuilt. We hope that the river will go back and people would reclaim their lands. So this is a brief story about this village. Our intervention had failed, but then the combination of things took place together, and as a result of that, the government had intervened.
Second point is the duration of you and then pattern, the long term, and you can return in some area where you have been working before and to see how the things change or not. Some years ago we worked also with the Building and Social Housing Foundation, make a book, to see to ask some groups who make reconstruction projects to return after 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years to see what happened to the village or the area they rebuilt. And it's interesting because when you have a reconstruction project, you have fun to make a project and no fun to make a follow-up or to continue to support local people. So. The third point is, like you say, don't rely on so-called local leaders. Sometimes they say not the truth, and it's complicated to understand the situation you describe. For me, it's very difficult also to understand that. Fourth point, you mentioned several times the way how to make a pressure on the local or national government with many groups who make a demonstration, a video communication through the press. I read some articles from you since 4 or 5 years, published in the national newspaper, who for me are very criticized the role of the government. Nothing has changed for people. So, how you consider the use of the press? So, is it Pakistan? But the use of the press like a way to communicate some thing. And the fifth point is funding. Because you mentioned a different time, okay, we can talk like this and it can make we have a good idea, but no funding. Even to make this case study, you say you have to travel 500 miles and no funding to do so. Like Terry said yesterday, yes, we believe on what we are doing, sure. But sometimes fuel to put in the car or motorbike is needed. Thank you.
So, to add to him, I think I agree with all the points. I mean, it's a very well written story, which is Sarwar Sahib's typical style, like a political critique, and use of words like efficiently oppressive government. Says somewhere that although quality of and access to social services and sanitation and security are poor and inadequate, the revenue and police departments are efficiently oppressive. So of course, very nicely written and really showing the power of advocacy work for Diara, which is again quite unusual, and that you engage with the political system. But I think you also indirectly hinted on the shrinking space for civil society. And that is also a reality in the context in the world today. And you know, it was shared from Cameroon as well, that civil society is not enjoying the same space as it used to. They look for the envelope, they look for, you know, some gains in the engagement, and which is not always possible for us. So this is an important point for us to consider, because that is changing the way the whole equations are built with communities, with local governments. You hinted about the power of mobilization, that from the extent from how a bottom-up approach can lead to change, where the Supreme Court noticed the movement that was created as a result of the efforts, and you know, you were included in the deliberations. But what was not so clear is the sustainability part of the initiative, and how will it sustain? I mean, you know, sometimes these kind of political advocacy work start with a lot of momentum and then they lose steam. How do we sustain this kind of thing? So that is a question that I would like to learn from you. I'm sure you will have examples. And if that can be reflected here also, then it will be a good experience for us to replicate.
Actually, I agree with their comments and suggestions. So I just have a few points which we could explore and think to further strengthen your case. So I think it would be good for you to include further background about your organization. You can cite your programs and services so that we'll have a further understanding of the nature and the scope of your work. It would also be good if you could provide like additional detail on other local actions done by the community aside from the mass protests, as they might have conducted their own initiatives in confronting flooding and land erosion. It was also mentioned that Patan's first interaction with the people of Pasti focused on building the capacities of women and local councillors for articulating their issues. Could you elaborate on this? How was this started? What were your specific strategies or initiatives? Another recommendation would be is to have a timeline of the history of riverbank erosion and floods, because in the background section you've mentioned a lot of major flooding disasters, so it would be good if you could present it in a timeline format so that it would be more visually appealing. And last question, are there other organizations apart from your group working in the area?
So if I may just quickly add to what Grace said, just this part of the context and the timeline will be very helpful. So I mean, just to put this thing.
I make another comment to
okay.
comment.
And I'd like you to repeat your first two questions or comments.
No, it's about the timeline, the detail. I would say for me, I have no interest. This is a political article.
Yeah.
This is a political article to denounce something, to say, oh, we should work like this or like this. So I could say all the detail about the river was 100 meters wide or 50 meters, don't care. For me, I mean, just for me. So. Thank you.
Well, I think that your first question was regarding the role as a catalyst, because it's a responsibility of the community to take up the issue. why they have not taken an issue because of the local power structures. And communities, particularly poor and oppressed communities, have learned one thing, that in the past, whenever anybody challenged a powerful person, they were suppressed. Mm-hmm. So this what we say, the fatalist attitude. So they have reached to this mindset that things are not going to change at all, unless there is somebody from outside. Mm-hmm. Because the moment outsiders go, and and we found out that they would try their best to find the background of the outsider first. If they think that the outsider is reliable and in some way has some linkages and influence, they would stand with you. Otherwise, they will just may be interested in some service delivery kind of a project. But since, as Manu and you said, our work is semi-political always. So we only talk to them that how we ask people questions, but and why. Why this is happening to you? And as a result of that, this conscientization, which Terry has, I think, noted at the end of my case study, the notion of conscientization. It comes through problem tree and button wire tool, sit with people and try to do some participatory analysis of their situation and how things could be changed. So our role remains that, and within over the last 20 years, we have learned that, especially in rural areas where feudals are very powerful, it is very important to work in the urban centers and find possible collaborators or people who are also unorganized, like we are working with Brooklyn workers and power loom workers, textile workers. So you build a coalition gradually and take up issues of rural communities who has very little space to protest. So this issue also comes under press because now media in Pakistan is very independent and critical. So it's a combination of things which take place ultimately, and even in this case, because like these women counselors network and some other networks which we had created, they come together and take up the issue. And for us, I think this the last question, which was regarding sustainability. We are not interested in that kind of sustainability. We believe that if people are organized, they will take care of their interest, and if they are really in trouble, then they can approach us anytime. So we leave our telephone numbers and contact details, and the person as well who are nearby. So because I'm given a lot of time on television channels, so I take up their issues as well. I write in English newspaper. What they do, they would ask some local journalists to translate it to Urdu language, and then article would also appear in the local newspaper. So that gives them a lot of empowerment that they're not alone. They have some support from Islamabad. So it's very dialectical relationship which I have. So as far as long term is concerned, we believe that this we have to gradually build up a movement. Regarding not rely on local leaders, because sometimes local leaders go to a local feudal and do bargain. Okay, I have 100 votes. So if you do this thing, I will make sure that in the next election you get support from my team. So the local initiative, the people's own organizations are undermined. So in that sense, we believe that relying always on local leaders, it's better to test the credibility of the local leaders. A lot of local leaders have in fact emerged who were very ordinary people before, but with, I would not say us going there, but because there were some people who were not happy with things. They were not happy with the local existing leaders. They thought we should work with outsiders. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, now we have hundreds of such leaders who were nobody even, they were unemployed, doing nothing, had no respect in the community or even within their own family. But gradually they became very active and emerged as leaders. So some of these women counselors, when in 2000, General Musharraf announced women quota in the local government, most of these women who were active with us, they contested election and defeated feudal nominees. So relying on people is more important than just local leaders. Funding, of course, is very important, but for writing a case study or going to an area where there is some trouble, one can find some money from his own pocket. So funding, we don't just rely. I was just mentioning to Terry that we have now worked with power loom workers and bricklaying workers, and whenever there is a plan to hold or organize a demonstration, they work extra hours, and all the money which comes from extra hours work is then donated to the movement. Like recently there was a South Asian labor conference in Pakistan, and we did not ask any donor to give any money, but we held a parallel labor conference in open area for 3 days. The official conference, along with the official conference, we had a parallel labor conference. And on all English newspaper on front page, every day the government would issue a statement and we would also issue a statement, and it would be published side by side. And it really embarrassed the government of Pakistan like anything. So, but one thing we always take care of, that we must not allow any member to use violence. So we abhor violence and any extreme step, and remain within the law, because that gives us a lot of strength and
strength. Remain within the
law.
Law,
yeah. Okay. Of course, the officials are more efficient as far as operation is concerned, but like school teachers, health workers, the soft side of the state is completely absent. While the revenue officers, taxmen, police officials are very active to catch people and to make money. Recently, there is a joke that the Punjab government has changed the uniform of police, and there are more pockets in the uniform. So it's a joke now that the previous uniform had only 2 pockets, but this uniform has 6 pockets. regarding, of course, the space is shrinking for civil society. Now we have a no objection certificate. For any activity which you are going to do, you must get the NOC. But that is only for NGOs, not for labor. So we are now using more of a labor platform instead of an NGO platform. So whenever we want to do, we ask laborers, you come and have a demo or have a press conference, have a meeting, and we go as a participant. Because NGOs can't hold without NOC, but other civil society organizations don't need any NOC from the government. So you defy in a very subtle way. what else? Regarding giving more information, I think it's a reasonable suggestion we can put, but I'm always shy of talking about my own organization. But we can put the timeline as well, it's a very good suggestion. That's it, I think.
Yeah.
If I understand.
You want?
Just a quick comment.
Yes.
Manu mentioned the strong language, political language in the Boba. Terry, now we have the experience that as writers, you want to send your message the way it should be. But within the context of the kind of paper that we want to do, we want to reduce the work that we that the reviewers of the paper that we submit will give us. So the experience we have is that when we use that kind of strong language, most reviewers deny it. They say, no, remove it or tune it down. Okay, for that is the message we want to send. But within the context of writing this kind of paper, we might not be able to choose the words, send the same message, but choose the words the way that the reviewers will not give us too much work. And then keep us back on time. Yeah. Thank you.
I just sent you my recent article on disaster.
Yeah.
Just forwarded to you. And I had a nationwide network on election monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And recently we had by-elections, and I was very critical about the way elections were conducted. And everybody said the election commission would be very angry with you. I said, that's good. But then the election commission had a meeting with young parliamentarians. This is a panel body in Pakistan,
mm-hmm.
which consists of 300 young people. And my article was distributed by election commission to all the participants. Because there was one line that election commission needs more powers. And
mm-hmm.
without that, the election commission can't effectively enforce its code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was debated in the parliamentary committee. And powers were given to the election commission.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah.
So, sometimes you don't know, but things do take place.
Yeah.
When you say it the way it should be said.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should be, most of the time, you should not be politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to say what is needed to be said.
Mm.
And it works.
Yes.
Sometimes it doesn't work.
But it does, I mean, it raises a question about the work of CSOs, where I've heard it said before that CSOs are regarded as just sitting on the sidelines being critical, and that prevents engagement with government bodies and so on. So that's one viewpoint. But another viewpoint, which I think comes out of your paper and some of your other work, and I think it's been mentioned before this morning, is the potential power of media and communications. So again, I'm just making an observation, I'm not drawing a conclusion, that there's an interesting tension there. On the one hand, sometimes criticism can just mean that governments are even more afraid of CSOs and push them to one side. Sometimes, as in your case with the Electoral Commission, the result is surprisingly positive. But in between those two extremes, if we're talking about ways that we can create influence, then clearly that whole area of the media is something that we need to take a lot of consideration of. Seems to me a point from this, yeah.
Well, you see, my opinion about engagement is that very often the officials try to co-opt you instead of engaging with you. And because of the power relationship, even civil society workers and activists happily co-opted.
Yeah.
And they don't criticize. I went to a number of conferences where government officials were sitting, and the civil society representative would not criticize the government at all. Mm. And media would then criticize the civil society. Mm. Because if you engagement does not mean that you compromise on your position. So it's a critical engagement, but this is in Pakistani context. But I think it's to keep this balance between engagement and without being co-opted is very, very crucial.
Mm. Yeah, it strikes to the heart of the NGO role in a way, the CSO role, is it? I won't say any more. I can see a clock ticking. I'll just save that thought. Yeah.
We come back to that. Kyo? No? You present briefly your.
Hmm?
You present briefly. Okay, very brief, very brief. So, on the occasion of the International Day for the Arts this year, there was a common statement of the chief of UNIRDR, chief of UNDP, chief of UN Climate Change, to say climate change and related disaster is a threat to rich and poor alike. Okay, so. Our case study is to show that it's not exactly alike. It's a very different the way of the impact of the disaster on the rich